Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 344. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're excited to have with us the internationally acclaimed writer and podcaster, Dennis Robinson.
Thank you so much for having me, Barney. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And before we start the interview, we have been talking almost 20 minutes before we even started the interview, just talking about junkyards and Gettysburg and ghosts and Michael Keaton.
Mr. Rogers, all kinds of just, like, if you were to try and guess what we were going to talk about before the show started, you wouldn't have guessed because I don't even know what the through point on anything is.
No.
How do you pronounce town names? Why are the towns named after certain things? Like, we had many a tangent.
We had tangents upon tangents. Well, then again, Dennis, I bet if you made a guess, chances are we probably did talk about that. Like,
it's probably
any
true.
Random thing.
Yeah. Do a random number generator of like topics. It'll probably be accurate. Like, it'll get it.
You have an amazing Kickstarter that is, as of this recording, has been launched. And it's Lycan, Solomon's Odysseys, chapters 1-3.
Yeah.
I love the subtitle, a mix of horror, adventure, and mythology. The third chapter in the love story of the world's first werewolf is Gilgamesh meets H.P. Lovecraft. Wow.
Yeah. So this is the third Kickstarter I've done. Both of the other two have been successful, so I've been really lucky with that. And this one has also gotten off to a great start, and we still have a few more days to go. And I'm positive we'll make the goal before then. But it's been a crazy ride. This is the first project I've gotten the little tag of Project We Love. I've tried so dang hard to get that thing, and I finally got it. And I was like, yes, all the work finally paid off. What does it mean? I don't know. Probably not that much, but I don't care. I still wanted it, so I got it.
So talk to us about Lycan then. This sounds like a really interesting storyline.
Sure. So as you read in the tagline, so the basic summary of Lycan, the series, is it's the story of the world's first werewolf. And so the first book in the series is the origin story. It sets up the whole world, sets up the character, the journey, everything like that. And then each book that comes after that it's the same character, but he's moving through time a little bit here and there and dealing with different regional monsters and mythologies and gods and stuff like that. So the second book went into like magic and ancient Arabic mythology and folklore and monsters and dealt with PTSD and loss. And then this third book goes into more like Sumerian stuff. So H.P. Lovecraft meets Gilgamesh. So we open, up to like cosmic horror and gods and things like that as well. So each book continues to move the story along and has this character sort of dealing with different time periods and situations and stuff like that. It's not like a time travel story. It's like he's just slowly moving forward in time and, getting to experience all these things from history.
Where did the inspiration of this story come from?
So I've always been a big fan of werewolves ever since I was a little kid, and I've always wanted to tell a story about a werewolf. And then about mid-2000s, I started playing the God of War games, and I got really, really obnoxiously into mythology, especially Greek mythology. Like, oh boy, I could tell you anything and everything about Greek mythology. And when we started doing Botched, a D&D podcast, one of our seasons is set in 1932 New York City, and that's an H.P. Lovecraft kind of setting. And the reason I did it in New York is that I wanted to have like a cultural melting pot so I could pull mythology from anywhere in the world, and it would make sense for it to be in New York because you have all these different cultures in this one city. And so in doing that season, I would be researching all these different mythologies, Japanese, Slavic, Chinese mythology, African mythology, South American mythology, Native American mythology, like all this different stuff. Because, media these days typically just covers Greek, Norse, and Egyptian some of the time. it's pretty much the big ones. You don't really get a whole lot else. Japanese to a lesser extent in like anime and stuff like that. But for the most part, you don't really get into anything else. And, you know, when we were doing that season, I really found it interesting, all the different mythologies and monsters and folklore and just like all the weird, creative, crazy stuff. Like, have you ever heard of a Ruguru?
A Guru is French for werewolf.
Yes. So the Ruguru is the Louisiana version of that, the French Creole version. And it's a werewolf, but it the lore of it is very different from like your standard werewolf. And it just has like these very strange differences. Like if you're at home and there's a Ruguru on the prowl, there's a very easy way to protect yourself. You put 13 items on the porch. Why? Because a Ruguru can't count past 12. And so it gets frustrated and leaves. Who thought that up? I do not know. But like that kind of stuff just fascinates me. Like why? Why did someone think that as far as like a mythology for like this horrifying monster? Or a leshy, which is like a Slavic tickle monster. And the way you deal with that, because it will literally tickle you to death, you just put your clothes on backwards and you put your shoes on the opposite feet and it'll let you go. It's like, why? Like, I don't know why, but it's just that sort of stuff has always just been fascinating to me. So when through doing Botched, I love telling stories. And, you know, I wanted to do sort of a mesh between werewolf and being able to, you know, deal with mythology. So I said, okay, I kind of want to do a story about the world's first werewolf, because I had this idea of doing a story about the world's first werewolf back in like 2009. And then I just shelved it because I figured I'm never going to make a comic or do anything with it. So I just didn't pay any attention to it. And then when we were doing Botched, we went to Dragon Con and I started hanging out with other nerdy people and I pitched the idea to them and they were like, yeah, no, you need to do this. And so that's sort of how it got started. And it's kind of just evolved over time since then, where I'm like, okay, I want to have it set or starting in this time period. So that way I avoid any existing lore on werewolves. Then I can do my own thing. And this way I can also have this character sort of interacting with the different time periods and historical characters and figures that I find to be interesting and different mythologies that I think would be cool to have like this character, you know, interacting with. So that's the long story of, you know, how I got into this and why I decided to do this particular project.
What's the origin story then of how the first werewolf was created? Is that giving anything away?
No. So in the first book, I set it up, and it's not like an original in terms of like idea, but it's basically like a Faustian deal sort of thing.
Okay.
Where the main character is put into like a desperate situation and he's unfamiliar with that kind of territory. So he doesn't know what to do. So he makes a desperate decision and he makes a deal with this entity. It's not a demon. It's not the devil or anything like that. It looks very demonic, but that's not what it is. And so he makes this deal not knowing what the consequences are going to be. And he has like enhanced strength and senses and things like that. And so when the marauders come back to his village, you know, he fends them off all by himself and everyone thinks, you know, everything's great. But, you know, that's when the other half of the deal comes in. You know, the full moon rises and then he turns into a werewolf and that whole thing. So it's a Faustian deal to sort of set everything up. That's how I'm doing the world's first werewolf anyways. And it's not communicable like it is in a lot of other lore. I do plan eventually to have different versions of werewolves running around and like those, you know, can pass on to other people and things like that. This one is its own thing. In a perfect world, I'd love to have like all the different types of werewolves that you see in like pop culture, you know, like the ones that look just like a regular wolf versus, you know, the ones that are almost human with just some sharp, you know, teeth and claws, like all the whole spectrum. I'd love to have all of that, the same universe, as well as like all the universal monsters and things like that. I would love to have all that in there too. It just depends on, you know, what I can make fit with the story that we're going with in each of the books that I'm doing.
So what is something fairly unique that you're able to take your own Dennis Robinsonian twist on the werewolf? Like, is it wolves?
So there is one thing, but I haven't revealed it in the book yet. So I don't know if I want to share it, but I will tell you.
You can make an exclusive.
I will tell you that it's very similar to like The Incredible Hulk or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Instead of it being like, you know, in movies and pop culture, when you turn into a werewolf, it's just sort of like the bestial nature within you or whatever. For this, it's like an actual other entity. So there's like two entities sharing this one body. And when the full moon rises, you know, it swaps. And the other, well, the thing that's different, since we introduced magic, there are other ways for him to change into a werewolf. So similar to the Hulk, if he gets too close to death, it'll pop out that way, which happens in the first book. And the second one, if there's somebody who can use magic and can manipulate, you know, a person's mind or things like that, that can also trigger it because, you know, they can, you know, alter, you know, the perceptions and things like that. So they can cause it to sort of come out and, like, you know, make one personality recede and the other one pop out, that kind of a thing. So there are different – so it is a little bit different from a werewolf in that sense, because usually either they have full control over lycanthropy in stories, or it's just on a full moon. That's usually the only way I've ever seen it, at least in pop culture, like movies and stuff like that, I would say. So mine's a little bit different than that. As, you know, each book moves on, it sort of goes into – well, it's not quite so black and white, like – he either does or he doesn't because of the moon. There are some extenuating circumstances where this could happen. And, you know, this is one instance where this could happen. And it's like a very specific use case scenario where it might trigger or happen, you know, things like that. And the other thing is, and we delve into it in the second book, is that, you know, with this character who's immortal for all intents and purposes, over time, the personality starts to bleed over. So, like, he gets very short-tempered. He gets more feral almost, where, you know, he gets very angry and will lash out because this other, you know, feral, you know, half of him is you know, there, and they're kind of just bleeding over on one another. So that's another thing that's a little different, because usually in werewolf books, it's just, you know, again, cut and dry. Turn into a werewolf, or it's a dude or a chick, whichever. And that's that. So it does change a little bit, and, you know, we play around with it. It's a little bit more... I would say flexible with how I'm doing it, as opposed to the normal lore is pretty set in stone. And it's going to have, you know, some of the normal aspects, the silver, of course, the full moon, you know, all that stuff is pretty normal and standard for the werewolf lore. I didn't want to veer off too far, but I did want to do my own little thing and twist on it as well.
Is it just going to be 3 issues, or is this going to be an ongoing series, or is it going to be a finite series that you're going to end up telling a whole, like, story, or how's this work?
So it's a finite series. So the series is going to be 15 books, book arcs, essentially, like the main, like, chunks of story. It's like, oh, 5 stories here, 5 stories here, 5 stories here. So it's 15 total. I know it happens all the way to the last page of the last book, so I have it all mapped out. But it takes about a year to a year and a half to do each book. And unfortunately, as I keep writing these books, I keep making them a little bit longer and a little bit longer, so then they take a little bit longer to get made. For instance, the first 2 books in the series, each one of those is 72 pages. The third book, which is on Kickstarter now, is 96 pages. And the fourth book, which I've written, is currently sitting at 108 pages, I believe. And I guarantee that book 5 will probably be bigger than that, too. So just depends.
These are, like you said, these are thick books. These aren't just like a floppy comic book.
No. So yeah, they're graphic novels.
So you're saying that it takes basically a year and about a year and a half to get one of these done?
About, yeah. So the way that I do it is when the team is working on a book, I start writing the next book. And then once I finish writing that, it then goes to the editor and we go back and forth on that until it's, you know, finalized. And then again, when the art team then catches up to that book, I then start writing the book that's after that, because I don't want to, you know, jump too far ahead and have all these scripts done and then not be able to remember anything that I wrote. So I'd like to do it a little bit more in the present. But yeah, so it's sort of like a conveyor belt where I have the script. It goes to the artist. He'll do, you know, the pages. When he's done with the pages, then it goes to the colorist. And then when the colorist is done, then it goes to the letterer. It can't really skip around too much. So it's always going to be, you know, but like first, the you know, artist, then colorist, then letter. Right. You can't really do it out of order or anything like that. So that's why it takes as long as it does, because the team is not just working on my project only. They have other projects going simultaneously. So, you know, they're working on everything, you know, as it goes. So it's one of those things where you just kind of work them with the schedule and hope it. So production for book 4 probably won't start until, I think they said after summer is when the artist said he would, you know, be able to start working on that. And then usually December is a month where they kind of take off because the Christmas holiday is very important to them. So they don't really do a whole lot of production during that month. So it's one of those things where you plan in that kind of a thing. So my guess would be, it's about a year and a half now for each of the books. For the first two is about a year a book, but now it's creeping up to more about a year and a half.
So I just did the basic math, Dennis. 15 books, 23 years.
Yeah,
you're looking at.
Yep, we did a convention in Erie a couple of years ago, and there was this guy who was dressed as a pirate. They made him go there. He does the pirate cruises on the Lake Erie. He did not want to be there, but they made him be there to hand out pamphlets. And he ran out of pamphlets. But they said, you still have to stay there. Just do something else. So he started carnival barking at people's tables. And most people didn't really like him. But he came to our table. We thought he was hilarious. So he just stuck around our table. And so he's just shouting about my book. And he's like, liken Solomon's Odyssey, similar timeline to Boyhood. You've ever heard of Boyhood? Took 15 years to make. This book, too, will also take 15 years. Come back in 15 years if you're still alive. We'll find out how it ends. That movie won awards. Maybe this will, too. Who knows? We'll find out in the future. Like, just stuff like that. It's going to take a long time to make these books. I don't like thinking about how long it's going to take.
So, Dennis, you have a background, as we mentioned, like you do a D&D podcast.
Yeah.
Is there any, because you've created a rich world, you know the question I'm going to ask you. Are you going to make a role-playing game supplement to Lycan?
I think that would be fun. It has crossed my mind, but at least as far as like when I was doing the first Kickstarter, I put it out there like, hey, if you want, we can do, one of the tiers was like, hey, we'll do like a bi-weekly game in the Lycan universe or something like that.
Right.
Nobody was interested. So I was like, okay, well, whatever. I'm not worried about it then. It would be something, I would be more than happy to do that. We, in fact, for the podcast, the year before we started recording, that particular campaign we did was a lycanthropy campaign where they were like, some of them were werewolves or were tigers or were boars or were bats, you know, stuff like that. So it's definitely something you could easily do in the world of D&D. And I already homebrew so much stuff that it would be easy for me to create, a Lycan version of this in terms of like, you know, creating an RPG based in this world. And I have another friend who, his name's Philip Kennedy Johnson. He does a series called The Last God. And that, one of the books, is literally like a little compendium for D&D, so you could play that universe as like a D&D sort of setting. So it is definitely something I would be interested in doing at some point. I just feel like it might be one of those things where might have to wait for a few more books to come out for there to be enough lore and things going on for, to create, the RPG setting or whatever.
So congratulations on, just how your story's going along. This is exciting.
Thank you.
If people want to learn more about Lycan or Hivehead Studios in general, where's the best place they could go to?
So we have the website, hiveheadstudios.com. You can go there. Actually, if you want to check out the first 18 pages of the first book for free, we have a digital sample up there. It's free. You literally just download the PDF and you can check it out.
Oh, cool.
You can also buy the first two books on the store, as well as some of the other merch that's on there, like mini prints and art prints and glow-in-the-dark enamel pins and, that sort of stuff. And then with the third book coming out, we'll have more stuff on there. I've actually been doing some Bob Ross-style nerdy landscape paintings that people have been asking me to add up on the store, so I got to put those up on there at some point, too.
Oh, cool.
So the thing going on right now is the Kickstarter for the third book, and you can get the first two books in there as well. And there's all kinds of different extras and whatnot that you can check out. And you can view that easily by going to lycanbook.com. That's lycanbook.com. Or you can search for Lycan on Kickstarter that way too, but I made that little link so it's easy to just redirect you right there. And then you can also find me on Instagram at Hivehead Studios or World's Most Okayest DM. That's my internet That's title awesome. That was given to me.
Well, perfect. Any final thoughts, Dennis?
No, not that I can think of off the top of my head anyways. It was a lot of fun talking with you. In fact, I almost feel like we talked more before the show started than after the show started. But no, I had a lovely time, and thanks so much for having me on. And like I said, the Kickstarter runs until the end of the month. So if you want to get in on that, you have until the end of March 31st, which is my birthday. And I'm definitely milking that for all it's worth, because of course, why wouldn't I? But yeah, so feel free to check it out, and you can back for as little as, you know, $5 if you want a PDF version, or if you want to be crazy, we have rewards all the way up to $1,000, which gets you all kinds of stuff, including the title God King, which we will put you in the book as, and one of the more favorite tiers is, you can die in the next book. So I'll take your picture and we'll literally have the artist draw you into the next book, dying a horrible death. And then you get a print, an 11x17 signed print of your death page.
Wow. Fun. Perfect. Thank you so much, Dennis. And come back, you know, come back on again.
Sure.
When you're the Kickstarter.
Will do. Yeah. I had a great time. Thank you so much for having me.
Exactly. And so to circle back, you mentioned Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice was filmed right next to the town next to my hometown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That, you know what? That tracks, because I feel like it has, you know, like Stephen King always sets his stuff up in like Massachusetts or whatever. Like yeah, it has maybe, that yeah. like upper northeast feel to it when you watch yeah. that movie. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, we're fit. So what else was filmed in our area? Wolf, the movie Wolf with Jack Nicholson.
Oh, with Jack Nicholson. I love that movie. Yep. That was filmed up there? See? Awesome.
Yeah.
What was filmed here? Gettysburg. I've
heard of that place.
Yeah. The original cut of that movie, I was in elementary school when they filmed that. My one buddy's in the background. He was walking out of a building and didn't realize, and you could see his blue baseball cap as the soldiers are walking by, and they edited it out eventually. But like the original VHS, yeah, he's just sitting there in the background with a blue baseball cap on. But yeah, that's the only like famous movie we've ever done. They just had some Hallmark movie they filmed. I think it's like A Christmas in Gettysburg or something like that last year. And oh boy, did it just shut the entire town down to film this little Hallmark movie. And it's just like, all right, well, just avoid town at all costs then, I guess.
Oh yeah, I mean, you see it. There's ton of, like those kind of Vermont-y film, like Christmas. It's always about that. It's always about that, like high stress business, you know, woman from.
She
New
just
York
doesn't
City
have time for a relationship. She just doesn't have time. Yeah. And there's this hunky, like I don't know, carpenter or whatever, who's like divorced
cheese,
or his wife's
some kind
dead,
of cheese farmer,
something. And then they find love, and then it yeah. doesn't work, and then it does work. I don't remember, but like that's every Hallmark movie.
Yeah. Well, because she went there at an Airbnb, and then he was fixing the sink at the time.
Exactly.
Yes. And he had some choice words about something to do with some high powered fashion something, and
there was
made her really mad, and then she
I went to go see Godzilla Minus One, which is an amazing movie if you haven't seen it, by the way. And they had a
thing.
Then
that was not filmed. And that was not filmed in Gettysburg.
Maybe, that was definitely not. I would have been there for that. Like, I would have made myself present for, I would have had my toy. I would have been like, all right, I'm getting stepped on or something. Like, come on. I don't know why Godzilla is this far inland, but whatever. And.